Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Rob from Cigar Store Idiots. You may be asking yourself what Moonwalker Delta 8 is. Moonwalker is the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products, an emerging category pushing the boundaries of the cannabis plant. By expertly combining terpenes with complementary flavors, Moonwalker represents the absolute pinnacle of Delta 8 THC products, all engineered for pure bliss and joy. If you have any questions or concerns about the legality of Delta 8, please feel free to visit moonwalker.com/pages/legal.
Thank you, sir, may I have another?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Cigar Store Idiots. I am Rob, and tonight I am riding solo. Everybody's kind of got their own thing going on with the holidays coming up. We've got crazy schedules and trying to work everything out. So everybody will be back in here eventually soon, but we wanted to give you something to listen to on your way to work tomorrow. So I hope you guys will enjoy what we're trying to do. We're going through a few changes. Finally got the studio moved. Happy with the spot we're in now. And we, again, also with our Instagram, we have a subscription that you guys can subscribe to, $4.99. We get you all kinds of exclusive content and live podcasts as they take place. Again, it's $4.99 on Instagram. The subscription can be canceled at any time. But again, we hope we entertain you enough to keep you around. So hope you're all doing well. And we're just going to go ahead and get into this thing. This story that I'm going to go over, I've got two stories I'm going to go over tonight, which is a little nuts, I think you get a kick out of them. So a man wins a 7-year legal battle to not have fun at work. It was a clear win for setting work boundary places, but it is a sad loss all over the world for happy hours. So let's go ahead and get into this. France's High Court, France, that is the country, France. High Court ruled that a man fired by a consulting firm for failing to go out for drinks with his colleagues was wrongfully dismissed. Okay, yeah, you did hear that right. So the man referred to as Mr. T in the court documents. He was fired by Paris-based Cubic Partners in 2015 when he refused to take part in team-building activities and weekend social events. His lawyer argued that it included excessive alcoholism and promiscuity. Okay, sounds like a good time to me, but Mr. T claimed that the fun culture in the company involved humiliating and intrusive practices, including crude nicknames, and shared his bed with other employees during work functions. It's kind of what happens in corporate America anyways already. So the company's lawyer, he also argued that the former employee sometime had a brittle and demotive tone towards subordinates and struggled with feedback and different points of view. If you thought that was crazy, the court actually ruled in his favor 7 years later, and they had to pay out up to 3,000 in euro in damages, and also took a look at his demand for furthering his amount to 461,406 euros at a later date. So this thing's not over. This guy could typically get way more money than he was awarded. So I'm just curious. I would love to have the guys here to get some feedback on what they would think about workplace activities being canceled because of somebody like this. I think we've all worked with somebody. We've all worked with a killjoy, a fun sucker, if you will. And this guy sounds like he's a card-carrying member of Fun Sucking. So if you're working out in corporate America and you're working with somebody like that, just know that they can sue you and make a lot of money and ruin a good time and ruin your job. So you ever catch any of those guys, just lock them up in the bathroom. Don't let them out. Or, I don't know, do something to their lunch, what they put in the lunchroom. I've heard that happens. So, I don't know. The second thing we wanted to get into tonight, the other story, which we've all, I think everybody's kind of been seeing the teasers on Instagram, and they've been seeing the teasers on Twitter of the cocaine bear. And it looks like one of those, like, ludicrous stories like Sharknado or... what's all these other crazy, Sharknado was the top one that I could think of just the most ridiculous stories, like Sci-Fi Channel type, stories. But cocaine bear actually was a real thing. And, in 1985, a flying drug smuggler dropped a load of cocaine over a forest in the United States of Georgia, which is where we live. Blue Ridge is not very far away from us. And apparently a black bear had ate some. And when I say some, he ate a lot. And it sparked a Hollywood film. So let's get into the story of Pablo Escobar. Actually his nickname. The Cocaine Bear movie, it is what it is. A bear got high on cocaine. And then there's actually a trailer for it you can watch now. So if you want to take a look, the Universal picture actually stars Kerry Russell and the late Ray Liotta. I don't know if he's going to be happy with doing one of those before he checked out on us, but... this event actually did take place in the forests of southern United States in Georgia, up around Blue Ridge in 1985. And I'll read the newspaper clip, and it said, "Cocaine and a dead bear. Blue Ridge, Georgia, December the 22nd. A 175-pound black bear apparently died from an overdose of cocaine after discovering a batch of drugs in the forest in Georgia. The cocaine was apparently dropped from a plane piloted by Andrew Thornton, a convicted drug smuggler who died September the 11th in Knoxville, Tennessee, because he was carrying a load that was way too heavy while he was parachuting, and he fell to his death. According to the Georgia Bureau of Georgia Bureau of Investigation, we can pay somebody to edit this if they want to email us. The bear's corpse was found surrounded by an open packets of cocaine, which had been deliberately dropped in the area from a Cessna aircraft piloted by a drug smuggler named Andrew Thornton. He was actually an ex-cop. A drug cop, no doubt. He was wearing night vision goggles and Gucci loafers. Thornton then parachuted out with 35 kilos. It was strapped to his body on his waist. And then he intended to retrieve the other packs he had dropped. But he actually fell to his death along the way. With all the cocaine on him, he had a couple of guns, and I think he had around $4,500 in cash, and he was found in a driveway dead in Knoxville where he was just too heavy for the load he had on him, and the parachute didn't support him, and then splat, there he was, a big meat bomb right there in somebody's front yard. 3 months later, the dead bear in the duffel bag containing like 130 kilos of cocaine were found over the state line in Georgia in the Chattahoochee National Forest. They did an autopsy on the bear, and they said he had absorbed up to 3 to 4 grams of the drug, but he probably had ate way more. And the film depicts the bear. I've already watched the trailer. The bear's going nuts, you know, like attacking people, rampaging through the whole town. It actually didn't happen that way, which is kind of disappointing. But they were saying that the cocaine that was found inside the bear's stomach was detected, and he died very quickly. The bear actually died very quickly. The medical toxicologist, an emergency physician, an addiction medical specialist in University Hospital in Cleveland Medical Center, he said that he didn't know if bears enjoy the taste of cocaine or the effects of cocaine, but they really like the way it smells. And I didn't really say that. There's not any really good answer about how much he had ate. Pablo Escobar, he was nicknamed Pablo Escobar, and he was stuffed, and he's actually on display wearing a Santa hat inside of a shopping mall in Lexington, Kentucky. So, Heater, I need you to go out there with your kids to this shopping mall, and I need y'all to make a Christmas card with this big brown bear with a Santa Claus hat on. And they've got him all set up, too. It's like a little Christmas scene. He's got a long, Santa Claus hat on his head and a duffel bag at his feet. So I guess portraying the cocaine that was in the bag. So that's the oddest thing I've ever heard, is a damn bear in the woods just stumbles across some cocaine and just decides to eat it. And there he is. It's Pablo Escobar. So a lot of people didn't know this. And I didn't either until I started looking into it, started researching it. But apparently, the Appalachian Trail is a highly intensely drug trafficked area. excuse me, and that goes all the way from, we take a look into, you got northeast Alabama, northwest Georgia, up into Tennessee, into Kentucky, over into North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia. So these are some hot spots that there's a lot of drug trafficking that's going on in this area, which is pretty shocking. And I'll try to go over some of the things that they're looking at here. we'll call them DTOs, which is drug trafficking organizations in the Appalachians. They're bringing in large quantities of cocaine, large quantities of Mexican marijuana. They're bringing in now methamphetamines from Mexico. There's also black tar heroin, which is being trafficked through this same Appalachian Trail. The black tar heroin is growing among middle and upper income abusers. And we all know that the heroin, excuse me, is an issue with the big opioid crisis that we have in the United States. And that's kind of why heroin's made a big comeback, because it was easy to get those pills at one time and people got addicted. Then the government kind of shut it down and made it a little harder for you to get opioids. Well, the next best thing was obviously heroin. So heroin's kind of booming. Tennessee, you got cannabis cultivators changing their planting, planting two times a year in that area. The cannabis cultivators in that region also are harvesting plants, manufacturing these small crops that are all over the Appalachian Trail. So it's kind of crazy to think about that. You don't get to think about going to the Smoky Mountains to go get some black tar heroin or some meth, but I guess it's a thing now. So you go into West Virginia, law enforcement officials report escalating violence in the state as trafficking and traffickers are coming into the area more frequently. You got crack dealers compete for drugs and territories. The increase of the drug-related violence has also been attributed by law enforcement officials and rising availability. I saw that Borky Pig tonight. The abuse of methamphetamine, crack cocaine, and pharmaceutical drugs. So that's going on right now in the Appalachians, Appalachian Trail. Criminal groups operating in the United States are numerous, ranging from small to moderately sized, loose-knit groups that distribute one or more of these drugs that we talked about. And then, of course, excuse me, the next big thing, you've got gangs. Gangs are starting to infiltrate in these areas, in these small towns, these small pockets of these small areas in Appalachian, which is pretty scary. And then the gangs are also, they're defined by a National Alliance of Gang Investigators. It's a group of associations of three or more people with a common same symbol, sign, name, or the member of individually or collected engaged in a criminal activity that creates an atmosphere or fear of intimidation. That's their definition on that. So let's get into let's take a look at some of these gangs. We'll go to... We have here the drug trafficking organizations. You got Mexican, Caucasians, and African American drug trafficking organizations. Lesser extent, street gangs, and the outlaw motorcycle gangs, which is another one. So they are the principal transporters of these drugs. The motorcycle gangs are in the Appalachian area. So the dealers are predominant cannabis cultivators. Also, you got to deal with money laundering organizations operating within the regions. 47 of those organizations were dismantled, and another 49 were disrupted back in 2006. Additional additional analysis of 250 organizations indicate that they are mostly polydrug organizations that transport and distribute the combination of drugs, including powdered cocaine. You got 133 organizations on that. Crack cocaine, you're looking at 81 organizations. Prescription drugs, 58 organizations. Marijuana, 54 organizations. And then we look at powder / ice methamphetamines, you got 34 organizations there. The Mexican DOTs are increasingly distributing wholesale quantities of these powder cocaines, Mexican marijuana, and high pure methamphetamines to a mid-level to retail level distributors in the region. So they're just kind of branching out everywhere. They're bringing this stuff in, and you got these small time dealers that's picking it up and selling it for them. The traffickers obtain most of the drugs that they distribute from the Mexican operation in Atlanta. They also obtain some Mexican DOTs in Chattanooga, Nashville, Tennessee, Lexington, Kentucky, and cities near the U.S.-Mexican border. Mexican DTOs, so DOTs, DTOs generally limit the distribution operation into a urban and a much larger suburban areas. They can supply Caucasian and African-American distributors who operate smaller suburban and rural areas. Now, I know we had this thing going on in Georgia, down in Atlanta. Like, you got these subdivisions. They're actually really nice subdivisions. They're really nice houses. These drug dealers would come in. They would buy a house in a subdivision, you know, really nice houses, really nice subdivisions. They would use that whole bottom floor. They would manufacture drugs and sell drugs out of there. And they also did sex trafficking. And this is happening right in somebody's, in your backyard, in your neighborhood. So it's not just for the inner city anymore. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. You have, the Caucasians are the predominantly cannabis cultivators. They're also kind of mid-level retail drug distributors in that area. The Caucasian DTOs typically distribute locally produced marijuana, Mexican marijuana, methamphetamines, powder cocaine, and also the pharmaceuticals are a big thing too, which, again, we'll go back to the pharmaceuticals, and also you have the black tar heroin. The African-American DTOs are also the principal mid-level and retail distributor in Appalachia. They typically distribute powder and crack cocaine, the black tar heroin, which we had talked about, locally produced marijuana. Law enforcement officials say that the African-American DTOs have begun to distribute MDMA within the past year, which is something new that's out that people are doing. Well, it's not new, but it's just the next big thing. Members of street gangs, to a lesser extent, the motorcycle gangs, distribute illicit drugs. The activities are largely confined to Knoxville to Charleston, West Virginia. However, no gang activity has been reported in Kentucky. I'll get some info on that. I find it hard to believe they're not in that same area. They're not operating in that area too, so. Street gangs range from locally based gangs such as Blood Money Gang to the Los Tres Puntas North and the 304 Boys are nationally recognized gangs such as the Blood Crips, Gangster Disciples, Latin Kings, and then you got the Vice Lords, MS-13. Members of these street gangs distribute mid-level and retail And they're trafficking in cocaine. They're doing marijuana, heroin, methamphetamines. The Hispanic street gangs in Tennessee are also distributing wholesale quantities of Mexican marijuana and powder methamphetamines and mid-level quantities of ice methamphetamines. Members of the Latin Kings in West Virginia also distribute OxyContin and at the retail level. And the motorcycle gangs such as the Avengers, the Brothers of the Wheel, Outlaws, Pagans, and the Mountain Rebels and Southern Sons manufacture and distribute. Now they're distributing methamphetamines. So it's a huge problem. I don't really know if everybody kind of, if you knew that was going on down in the South, down in the area on the Appalachian Trail. And I don't think really the police knew that was really going on too much until this whole incident happened with this damn bear. So Pablo Escobar kind of brought all this stuff to the forefront. It you know, put some eyes on some things that were going on that I think they just really weren't paying attention to. Didn't think they had a reason to, and they just kind of like dumb lucked across it. And once they did, then they, you know, realized that, hey, this is a major problem that we have running around on the Appalachian Trail. So, you got number of methamphetamine laboratory seized on the Appalachian Trail. And these dates go back 2004, 2005, 2006. So, Kentucky in 2004, you had 115. In 2005, you had 85. And in 2006, you had 36. These are labs that were seized. Tennessee, you were looking at 355 in 2004. 2005, you had 194. And in 2006, 86 methamphetamine labs were busted. West Virginia, you had 74 in 2004, 77 in 2005, and then 2006, you had 54. So in total, the total in that time frame, 2004, you had 544 labs. 2005, you had 356. And then in 2006, you had 176. Those are methamphetamine labs that were seized in the Appalachian area. So transportation, drug traffickers often operate in the region typically to use private and commercial vehicles to transport illicit drugs from the Appalachian region. The Mexican DTOs frequently transported powder, cocaine, and Mexican marijuana, ice, other drugs in the region from Atlanta, other southern cities into the Southwest. Caucasian and African American DTOs generally transported the drugs in the region from Atlanta, and that went out to Baltimore, that went out to Cleveland, Columbus, Ohio, Detroit, Charlotte, Pittsburgh, and New York. Drug traffickers and some abusers in the Appalachian area use package delivery services to ship illicit drugs into the region, particularly the pharmaceuticals that were obtained on the internet. Which we all know are tainted, like that now is really dangerous, tainted with probably fentanyl. According to law enforcement officials, that the number of parcels containing such items is rising. You know, it's still going up. This is a little bit of an old story, but I can only imagine. We'll have to do a recap, revisit this one with some more current dates and see how it's changed, if it's got better, if it's got worse. I can only imagine that it's got worse. So according to law enforcement officials, the number of parcels containing such items were rising in the area because of the online pharmacies. Furthering the Kentucky Bureau of Investigation to estimate that 85% of all pharmaceuticals shipped into that area were illegal. That's a lot of drugs. Distribution. You're looking at the Mexican DTOs are the primary wholesale distributors of the powder cocaine and the Mexican marijuana and the methamphetamines. Some Mexican DTOs in urban areas also distribute these drugs at a retail level in addition to crack cocaine and then Mexican black tar heroin. The Caucasian DTOs are principally they're usually dealing with the locally produced marijuana. And then they'll also get a hold of the Mexican marijuana, methamphetamines, powder cocaine. They're all selling the same things. It's it's so rampant. And then of course you got the motorcycle gangs, which are doing a lot of the distributing through the Appalachian Trail, the Appalachian Hills. The retail distributors typically takes place in an open air drug markets, private homes, businesses, housing projects throughout the region. They're also using prearranged meeting areas like parking lots. Retail distribution in Kentucky takes place in homes and businesses. And then, of course, the drug-related crimes in this area. Statistics are not consistent, really, with the tracking. But the drug-related violence poses serious threat to law enforcement and citizens around in the Appalachian area, particularly in West Virginian counties. The violent drug-related crimes include assault, robbery, home invasions, shootings. Law enforcement in West Virginia report a rise of level of violence in Boone, Braxton, Cable, Gilmer, Lewis, Lincoln, Logan, Mason. It sounds like the starting lineup of the offensive line of some D2 school. Mingo, McDowell, and Wayne counties. The traffickers particularly are crack dealers, and they compete for the drug territory. So this is all in West Virginia. This whole area is eat up with crack cocaine. And if anybody has anything to add to this, please feel free to inbox us, message us, and let us know. We would love to talk to you. You got 16 of the 34 states and local law enforcement agencies in the Appalachian area that respond to report crack and the drug contributes the most. It contributes to most of the violence in the area in their jurisdictions. And so when you go to the abuse, marijuana is most likely the most abused drug, and then it goes to pharmaceuticals, cocaine, methamphetamines, and then of course heroin rounds it out. So treatment. More individuals were treated for marijuana abuse in Kentucky from 2001 to 2005 than they were treated for cocaine abuse. Smoke by other routes. So they're smoking cocaine is the next thing that they're treated for. Heroin and pharmaceuticals are next. And then rounding it out, you're going with the opioids, hallucinogenics, stimulants, tranquilizers, and sedatives. Or what we call amphetamines, which is methamphetamines. So law enforcement officials also report that the drug abuse in the region are more inclined to use divert pharmaceuticals than any other drug except marijuana. So here we circle back around to how addictive and how dangerous pharmaceuticals were. Law enforcement officials are reporting that the drug abuse in the region are more inclined to the pharmaceutical things other than anything else except for marijuana. And then treatment providers in those areas are reporting the abuse of, you're looking at the benzos, klonopins, diazepam. These man-made pharmaceutical drugs that they're having to treat the most. You know, those are the ones that people are having such a hard time with. And also too, methamphetamines is on the rise. It exploded in that region at that time. So they're having a lot of issues with people on methamphetamines. And of course you got people hooked on methamphetamines, your crime rate increases, you know, as far as, you know, thefts and violence, all that stuff. It kind of just follows right, you know, follows suit one right after the other. The abuse of high pure methamphetamines is increasing in the region, just largely because it's just cheap and readily available and easy to get. So, and easy to make. So, that's just some terrifying statistics, man. It's just, it's hard to even know where to start to put an end to it. Like it's hard to know. I mean, you know where it comes from. You know who's bringing it in here. But it's almost impossible to stop it from getting here, you know. So I don't know. I don't know. They got their hands full in this region. This Appalachian region has its hands full. And I hope this story we gave, I gave you a little bit of light on an area that you wouldn't have thought was so, it was so dangerous. Actually kind of terrifying knowing that we live so close to the Appalachian Trail and the Appalachian area. And, these things are going on. So, well, that's going to do it for this episode. I really do appreciate you guys, support and everything that you've done for us over this past, we're right at 3 years. So we've been rocking this thing up for 3 years. So we appreciate your support. Again, please don't forget about our Instagram subscription. Don't forget about our Patreon. We've got, like I said, we have a whole list of shitty movie reviews coming up and some more content there for you guys to dig into. And then, last but not least, don't forget to share the podcast with your friends or your family or whoever else likes podcasts, because you guys are the reason that we are growing, and your continued support and you sharing our content and you letting people know to like and subscribe the podcast, man, it helps us so much. And so we greatly appreciate you. And until next time, everybody have a good evening, and we will see you soon.
Either up your nose or through your vein, with nothing to gain except killing your brain.